it's Foxy. Willie B is out today. We have a very special show for all you wrestling fans listening today. The mayor has been so excited for this show. He is the founder, president, CEO of this podcast. He is the man with the plan. Ladies and gentlemen, Mayor McCall.
Oh, Foxy, what a podcast debut, and you're right. I have been so excited for this one. You know, back in the day, we used to raise the roof, and right now I'm raising the roof. We got a very, very special guest today. He is the son of the superstar, Bill Dundee. He's wrestled all over the world. He is one half of one of the greatest tag teams ever with Wolfie D, PG-13. Ladies and gentlemen, the one and only Jamie JC Ice Dundee.
Well, thank you, Mayor. Thank you. That was a fine, fine introduction, and I appreciate it, and I'm glad to be here. And let's go, man. Let's give it to them what they want.
Man, I want to dedicate this podcast to two very, very special people. For one, your dad, superstar Bill Dundee, just turned 80 years old, rocking and rolling. And I get so tired of just honoring these people once they're not here. So let's go and give Bill Dundee his flowers today. One of the greatest wrestlers to ever walk, you know, God's green earth, the superstar Bill Dundee.
Sure enough, very much so. Hell of a story for that guy. I mean, he's my dad, of course, and I love him to death. But as far as not even that much, his whole story of being a kid in Scotland and getting on a boat and floating to Australia and joining the circus and then becoming a wrestler and then coming to America and becoming the superstar, man. I mean, it's a pretty damn unique story, man. I don't have the guts to do it, you know.
He's one of the greatest of all time. And I also want to dedicate this show to a very, very special friend of all of ours, the Mayor's Foxy and JC Ice, our good friend Matt Mills. He's going through some health issues right now, and we're going to do a special.
No, really, he's recovering from JC Ice hitting him with a hubcap at the liquor store, but you're right, though. It is a little health issues going on, and then it's a bad thing, and we just wish him well, man. I wish the best for him.
And I can't thank you enough for the video that, you know, you went all in, man. You came out JC Ice PG-13 style, and that lifted his spirits up, and you don't know how much that meant to, you know, me, his family, Foxy. You know, just thank you from the bottom of my heart for doing that,
yes,
brother.
Yes, sir. Ain't no problem. Like I said, if I can give back a little something that everything's all the people's gave me throughout my life, then I'm happy to do it.
Absolutely. Let's roll into it. So we all know you're the son of the superstar. So how did you actually, you know, I know you grew up in the wrestling business, you know, but how did it come about you came into the business?
Well, it's like anything when you're born into something, you know. My father came from, like I said, from Australia to America in 1975 to be a wrestler. And he was already a wrestler, and they just brought him over here to show his talents. But anyway, I was 4 years old when we came here, so I've been around it my whole entire life, you know. And when you grow up around something, it's kind of like when I was a kid, I never really wanted to be a wrestler. You know what I mean? Because I just grew up around wrestling, and wrestling was just, that was all there was in our life. So I was like, you know, I don't want to do that. But of course, once you get a little bit of the stardom of the bit by the bug, as they call it, when I was 8 years old, my daddy maybe got some jumpsuits made that matched his jumpsuits, and I could go to the shows with him, and I would wear them. And then, you know, all the little old ladies would tell me to give them hugs and kisses and stuff. And I tell my daddy, I said, Daddy, they smell like alcohol and tobacco and stuff. And he said, well, charge them. And so I said, oh, all right, dear. So when I went out and through the crowd, and they'd say, Little Dundee, can I have a hug? And I'd say, ma'am, hugs are $1 and kisses are $2. And then my women say, well, here's $5. You give me 2 each. And I'd say, oh, good, but I would do it. And then I thought to myself, I could do this for the rest of my life.
they throw you 20 bucks and say, run through the whole family.
yeah. But in 1975, they weren't throwing you 20 bucks. It was $5. And that was a lot because, you know, minimum wage was $2 an hour. So, but I mean, I would go to the shows with my daddy sometimes and come home with 20, 30, 40 bucks. That's a lot of money, man. That was a whole day's 8 hours work at a regular job, you know. And I thought, well, I can do this for the rest of my life. But then my daddy got a wrestling school when I was about 16 years old. My dad opened up his first wrestling school. And so, of course, him being Bill, he's not going to get in there and take no bumps. So to teach people to wrestle, he would say, okay, everybody body slam Jamie. Everybody drop kick Jamie. Everybody put Jamie in this hold. Everybody do this to Jamie. And so I would have to take 20, 30 bumps in a row from all these people in the wrestling school until they learned. And then by the time it was all over, when I was about 17, I knew how to wrestle pretty good because I was taking so many bumps every wrestling school. I was taking 40, 50 of the same, so I really didn't know it, but I was learning to wrestle myself. And then I was about 17, and my dad said, look, son, you're not going to be the president or the mayor or anything because you're still in friggin' eighth grade or ninth grade, or it's time for you to come on the road and learn what I know. And I learned to drive, and so I started driving Bill around and just learning wrestling. I became his manager up in Knoxville, Tennessee, for a guy named Ron Fuller.
He's been on the show.
Oh, yeah. Well, Ron opened up the USA Network, and my dad, he called my dad to be the booker. So me and my dad and the Rock and Roll RPMs, Mike Davis and Tommy Lane, we all loaded up in a little car, and we'd ride to Knoxville territory every night. We'd go back home to Nashville, but we'd ride back to Knoxville territory, which was hard, man. But I didn't care. You know, I was loving it. I was making $15 a night, son. I was big money.
Man, you was about to be Cadillac riding back then, man.
Yeah, man, I didn't know about it. After that company closed down in the first year, then my dad went back to Memphis, and that's when we did the angle where Sid Vicious broke my neck and all that stuff. But my very first three matches was main events. It was me and Dundee and Lawler in a six-man tag, and in the first three, we went over. I was 3-0. I should have quit right then. I was the main event and 3-0. I should have just went on out in style right then, man.
Man, what? And I've heard so many interviews of yours, and I've never heard that story. So, Bill starts a wrestling school and makes you the number one jobber. How funny is that?
Well, yeah. Well, I was the dummy. I was, because Bill wasn't going to get in there and take a body slam from 30 different people that don't know what they're doing, you know, because he still wrestled and stuff. So he would. It was just like, everybody body slam Jamie, and I'd be like, golly, man. So I'd say to him sometimes, don't teach him backdrops tonight, man.
But you know,
I don't take no 30 backdrops, bro.
But you know, all kidding aside, you probably had more experience than some of the guys that have been in the territory for years going through that.
Oh, yeah, that's what I said. Before I knew it, I didn't even realize it, but I'm sure my dad knew it, but I didn't realize that I was learning to wrestle right there, and I was learning good because I was, you know, if you just tell somebody to do something repetitively over and over, it gets boring and it gets monotonous, and people get tired of it, and they don't want to do it. So you have to change it up, but with, you know, there's got to be a dummy in there. Somebody's got to be in there taking the bumps to know, to tell them, well, you did that right or you did that wrong, and before I knew it, I was a pretty damn good wrestler.
Hell yeah, you are. That's kind of how it worked out this morning. You know, Willie B wasn't around to take the bump, and I said, Foxy, you're going to have to learn to bump this morning, baby. You got to come
right
on with it.
That's right. Many, many, many ring boys had became big stars from setting up the ring, and then be somebody no-show, and they say, hey, boy, go put them tights on, get in the ring. You know what I mean? Same as anything. You know, Harrison Ford became Han Solo from building the set. You know, he was a set builder in the friggin' Star Wars things and ended up being Han Solo. So you just never know in this world.
Man, and you go on to be Indiana Jones, man. Does it get any better than that in life? I don't think so.
Right. Yeah, right. Then he went on to become Indiana Jones, no doubt. And it all started out with him with a hammer and nails because he knew how to build, he knew how to build things with wood. So he was a set builder, and all of a sudden he became Han Solo and Indiana Jones, and I bet he never looked back.
Man, the rest is history, brother.
Sure enough.
How, you know, and this is, and you know, we've had some, you know, really big names on the show. I've been so blessed and fortunate to get to talk to you guys, but it's like, man, talking to you this morning, it just, you know, it just puts me back to my childhood, man, sitting there, you know, growing up on Church Road in South Haven, Mississippi, having, you know, every Saturday morning, you know, from 10 to 11:30, watching you guys on, you know, Channel 5, and, you know, PG-13 is just one of my absolute favorite tag teams of all time. I mean, you and Wolfie, I mean, it doesn't get any better, you know, than you guys in my book. How did you get hooked up with Wolfie?
Well, me and Wolfie, when we went to call the Outlaw Territories, you know what I'm saying, we would wrestle every Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday for a guy named Dale Mann and another guy named Shelby Adcock. And then in Shelbyville, Tennessee on Thursday nights for the Mullins boys. And so, you know, and that's how you get your start. You go to what they call these outlaw towns and you start wrestling and you learn to wrestle with, you know, outlaw. Because, see, me and Wolfie got together. We wrestled each other. Wolfie started wrestling first as DJ Wolfie D or Sir Wolfie D or something like that. He just had on a pair of shorts and look, you know, and then we were wrestling each other. It was the Ice Baby Jamie Dundee versus Wolfie D. And then Chris Champion said, man, you guys ought to do that together. Said, y'all ought to do that, you know, because we're both doing the same kind of rap, white boy rap gimmick. And he's like, y'all need to do that together, man. And so I put the shorts on the next time we went back to Shelbyville. I put the shorts on, and Chris Champion said, y'all need to be like the new breed of the 90s. And so that's what we thought. Well, you know what? Rock and Roll Express always been my heroes. So, you know, when I was a kid, them against my brother-in-law, Bobby, is the damnedest match you ever seen. But anyway, I said, we need to be the Rock and Roll Express of the 90s. So that's when we thought up the, you know, the rapper gimmick, and we put the shorts on, and we went to my mama's house, and we painted them all up. And the hubcap came in play because we wrestled in a cab stand. On Thursday nights in Shelbyville, and there was hubcaps laying everywhere. So I just grabbed a rope and tied it around one of the hubcaps and said, I'm going to wear this to the ring. And said, this will be the finish. So then there was a can of red spray paint where they had touched up the fenders or something on one of the cabs or whatever anyway. And so I just took it and painted PG-13 on the hubcap. And actually, the hubcap and all that is what got us most of our jobs, because it was so kind of original. You know what I mean? It was something new, and that's hard to find in the wrestling business, something new, you know?
Absolutely, and you know, you got to look at it from a fan's point of view. Like you said, it's different, original. You know, we're sitting there as like kids marking out, like, man, did you just see that? Dude just hit dude with a hubcap, man. Y'all got to check this out, you know?
Yeah, well, that's kind of what it was. See, I told Wolfie, I said, when we Jeff Jarrett actually came to one of them outlaw shows in Beaver Dam, Kentucky for Shelby Adcock one time, and he saw us doing the gimmick, and he said, have y'all showed this to my dad? And I was like, no. He said, man, go show this to my dad, man. My dad will love this. Talking about his dad, Jerry Jarrett, right? So the very next week, I called Jerry Jarrett, and I say, Jerry, I got something I want to show you, gimmick, yada, yada. And he said, well, man, I'm sick this week. He said, give me till next week. So then, you know, he blew us off for a week. So then I lived in Kentucky, and Wolfie lived in Nashville. So I drove to Nashville, picked Wolfie up the next week, and we went to the mansion, and we called him, and he said he was still sick, and he wouldn't let us in. I said, okay. So then that's 3 weeks. So now the third week, I drive back to Nashville and I do it again, because he said, just come back next week on this day. And of course we did. And then he said, man, I'm still not feeling well. I said, look, Jerry, I don't need but 5 minutes of your time, man. I've done drove here twice. I'm tired of driving here. Just give me 5 minutes. If you don't like it, we'll go away, man. So he said, okay, come to my office, which was on the back part of the big mansion. So we pull up to the house and we go. And I tell Wolfie, I say, when we go in here, if we can get him to smile, he's going to give us a job. I said, if you don't smile, we're out of luck. And literally, we walk in and we show him the outfits. We get dressed in there for him. We do everything. And we had little fake gold teeth, and we slid them in and everything. And he's just looking at us. And I take the hubcap out of the bag and I put it around my neck. And he says, what is that? I said, that's the finish. And he starts to smile. And I just look at Wolfie, and Wolfie looks at me, and I'm like, yep, he's going to give us a job. And so then he says, okay, y'all boys will start in 4 weeks. And I said, 4 weeks? He said, yep, we're going to make rap videos. We're going to have 4 rap videos. We're going to make them, and we're going to play them for 4 weeks. And by the time y'all boys hit, the people will be happy to see you. And sure enough, that's exactly how it went.
Man, I've heard about that house before. It's been compared to like George Jones. That's a monster house Jared had, wasn't it?
Yeah, man. And it's also like, especially for the time, you know what I mean? For the 80s, you know what I mean? When when people talk about Graceland, when you go to Graceland now, Graceland is nothing now. But if you think about it, 1965 or 56 or whatever, when it was built, it was unbelievable. You know what I mean? It was so... When you go to it now, my bedroom was bigger than that house. But I mean, for the time and the era, that house is just like the Jarrett Mansion. It was unreal, man. It was really unreal.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Like, you know, like you go these days and you're like, far as, you know, really just square footage and amenities and all like that, you're like, this ain't nothing special. But like you said, like back in the day, I mean, that was jaw dropping, you know, like, whoa.
Oh my God, yeah, you gotta think, that's right, you gotta think about the time, you know, the you know, it's like anything, you gotta think about, you know, the Graceland is really not that big of a house at all. But at that time in the 60s, it was huge. It was unthought of. And the same as the Jarrett one, it was unthought of. It was unthought of in the 80s. See, he actually drew it in college, and he got a C on it. because they said it couldn't be built. So when he built it, he actually found the teacher and made the teacher come and change the grade in his paper because he built it. And that's no bull. That's no joke.
Oh, wow. Foxy, what would you think about us having a jungle room?
I don't know about that.
But I don't know what Elvis did in his jungle room. I don't know if he really hunted or if he, because he was always him and the colonel. Well, I don't know. You just don't know what Elvis did in his jungle room.
Yeah, you don't know. It was like, it was, you know, it could be business with the colonel, could be business with Priscilla. Who knows? We wasn't there, you know.
Or Slash could have came over and played the game. I really don't know. Welcome to the jungle, baby.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, and what is like some of the first teams that, you know, you and Wolfie work with when you guys got started in the territory? I know one of them was Eliminators.
Gosh, you talk about working. You earn your money on that night because them boys were stiff.
I'm a big fan of Wolfie, and I listen to a lot of Wolfie stuff, and I've heard him say that, you know, I think you guys had went to Randy Hales or whatever and said, man, we got to stop this. These guys are beating our ass every night, man. Enough of this shit.
Yeah, these guys are, because they are, I mean, they had just came in back in from Japan where you got to be stiff anyway.
Yes, yes.
And Perry Saturn is a no-joke, real, real deal guy. You know what I mean? He's a badass, and he's tough, and he's, well, I mean, hell, they found him under a bridge, shot, and he's, you know, he's still alive. But Perry Saturn's always been a struggler and a fighter and a tough son of a bitch, man. Oh, sorry, USWA, baby, USWA.
Oh, you're good, man, you're good. I think Perry Saturn's the only wrestler I know that's probably went to Mars and survived and came back, you know?
Yeah, sure enough, man. The rings of Saturn, you're not wrong, because, and bless his heart, old John Crotus, he was just, there's a video of me and him working a single match in ECW where I make fun of him and call him a retard and stuff, but really, that was really close. Because, I mean, poor John, he for a 300-pound guy, man, that dude was huge, man, and for 300 pounds, he could do a friggin' moonsaults and 1.5 flip gainers and all that, and he was impressive, bro. But God, they were so stiff, man. And old Perry would literally beat John up when you get to the back if John wasn't stiff enough. I mean, Perry would smack him around, and I mean, Perry, tough guy, man. And so poor old John, he got the wrath from both ends, man. If he didn't do something right, or if he did do something right, bless his heart. But they were just tough guys, man. And I honestly believe those were the first two guys that made the people believe that me and Wolfie are tough enough to be in this spot. You know what I mean? Because the people have to believe that you believe, you know?
Man, Saturn just has that certain, you know, charisma. And he has that look in his eye like he's really about to break bad on you.
Yeah, well, he is, because we did a three-way dance with the Japanese boys that they brought, Doug Gilbert had brought in. It was the Orient Express, they called him, and then them and us, and we did a three-way tag team dance thing, and he told that boy in Japanese, because Perry goes to Japan a lot, so he told that boy in Japanese, you know, listen, my shoulder's messed up, don't do nothing to this left shoulder here. And when that kid went to take Perry down, man, Perry spins around on him and just whoops the hell out of him, man. And then when they go back to the dressing room, then, you know, the Japanese boy's bowing, very sorry, sir, I'm very sorry, sir. And Perry's like, I told you, man, you know, Perry's a no-nonsense, tough-ass guy, man. I would hate to get into a shoot fight with the guy for real. I hated getting in a wrestling match with him. So
he was one of those guys, like, you know, you growing up, you know, you go to the gym and all, and you're like, if I could be, you know, any professional wrestler and have that look, you look at Perry Saturn and be like, yeah, I would love to look like that dude.
Yeah, his body was perfect. He's great, and he had a crossed eye, so he would really look more intimidating and tougher. And then now he's tattooed his face and all that stuff. I mean, the dude has just always been an intimidate, but he's. He did it right. He did it because, which is really crazy, but he did no drugs and he saved his money. He did everything you're supposed to do. He went to the gym every day. And then when WCW closed down, it's just like out of nowhere, he's a homeless guy. You know what I'm saying? Bam, he's homeless. And that's just crazy, man. It's hard to fathom, man.
It really is. And, you know, you and Wolfie were so good on, you know, y'all's own, but, you know, I think it's always, you know, a team effort, like the, especially in the USWA, you know, Dave Brown and Corey Macklin, those announcers, man, they would just, you know, put you guys over and make y'all look larger in life. You know, talk to us about Dave Brown and Corey Macklin.
Yeah, well, I really don't remember Corey Macklin much, because it was Lance Russell and Dave Brown in my generation. You know what I'm saying? I kind of remember Corey being there, but Corey could have been anybody. You know what I mean? Lance Russell was the man that if Lance Russell said you were good, then your career took off.
Absolutely.
If he said you sucked, then he would kill your career quicker than hell, whether anybody wanted them to or not. So it was really Lance, like you just said, they sold Lance and Dave together, but Lance especially sold the wrestler. If Lance Russell put you over enough, people believed. You know what I mean? If Lance Russell said you were great, you were great.
Man, I've actually had the honor and pleasure of becoming good friends with Shane Russell. Me and Shane, he's came to town, and me, him, and Willie B, we've had lunch, and I talk to him on a regular basis, and he is just an awesome guy, man. And his dad is, I will go on record, Lance Russell is the greatest commentator ever to get on a wrestling microphone. And not only could he talk, his mannerisms and looks on his face and everything, he could actually make you believe. He could look at him and I always tell people this about the Tommy Rich and Eddie Gilbert angle, that that he could have the look on his face like when that he lost a family member. He could sell anything and put you over. Like you said, if he vouched for you, you were in. If you sucked, hang it up. It was OV.
That's what, yeah, especially in Memphis. If Lance is what I meant, exactly what I meant by that. Lance Russell could make or break any wrestler that came to Memphis, even if the company didn't want him to. If he just gave his real opinion, or if he felt, hey, I mean, it was because sometimes I remember Lawler saying to him, okay, now listen, Lance, you got to make this guy look good. We know he sucks, but put him over so the world believes it, because yes, very much so, the greatest announcer in wrestling, bar none, Lance Russell. The second one, Gordon Solie.
Absolutely. And that, his biggest deal and draw is the Dream Machine. I remember when Dream Machine was the first one to put his hands on Lance Russell, in the back, like, man, what the hell are you doing? Don't ever do nothing like that. You don't touch Lance. Lance is untouchable.
Yeah, you can't touch Lance. No. They did it with an angle one time with my dad turning on Lawler and them, and my dad smacks him. And that was the first time Lance had ever been touched, as far as, smacking him. Now, like you said, Dream grabbed hold of him, but nobody touched Lance Russell. So if you touched Lance Russell, then by God, it was on for you,
Exactly. Exactly. I was thinking about the other day, I was like, I know, PG-13, one of my, favorite, tag teams, bar none, of all time. But I was thinking, what is my favorite feud with, that PG-13 had? And man, I would have to go with the Rock and Roll Express, man. Those were some banger matches. Those were like, damn, like jaw dropping. Like, it was excitement in the air when the four of y'all got together. Talk to us about working with, Rock and Roll Express.
Well, man, once again, we're talking two of the greatest in the business, Ricky Morton and Robert Gibson. You know what I'm saying? Because, I mean, and of course, my brother-in-law, Bobby Eaton, Midnight Express. The Midnight Express and Rock and Roll Express matches are the best you can ever watch, besides the Lawler versus Dundee. But working with the Rock and Roll was, just like I said, I believe the people said, damn, these two little white boys are tough when we worked with the Eliminators. But then when the Rock and Roll Express put us over, I believe that sent us to the next level of stardom. You know what I mean? The people said, damn, not only are they tough enough, they can do it, Because, I mean, wrestling with Ricky and Robert is still today, it's wrestling with Ricky and Robert. It's something that, but to make a great tag team, you must have that chemistry where the other one knows what you're thinking. Me and Wolfie had it. They got it. My brother-in-law, Bobby, with anybody, got it. You know what I'm saying? But a lot of people, you can't just say, I want to put, just say so-and-so with so-and-so and make a tag team, because if they don't click together, then it don't work. So when we got to work with the Rock and Roll Express, man, first of all, that's exactly the words I used to Wolfie when we started our gimmick, is I want to be the Rock and Roll Express of the 90s. You know what I mean? So they were always heroes of mine. Since I was a little boy, when I came to America at 4 years old, Ricky Morton used to pay me $5 to cuss at the other wrestlers because I spoke Australian and I was cross-eyed, and he thought it was great. So I've known Ricky Morton my whole entire life. I've known his dad was a referee, Baldy Appalling. They call him Baldy. He was the bald head of referee that was in Memphis all them years. That was Ricky Morton's dad. So Ricky Morton has been in the wrestling business, such as myself, since he was basically a kid, And so working with them, and not only working with them, but having them to put you over is such an honor. You know what I mean? Because even though we're in a gimmick business that we know the outcome, it's still an honor for that guy to put you over, because if he don't put you over, then you don't go to that next level. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. The Rock and Roll Express, they had that they had the credibility. I mean, you know, multiple time NWA World Tag Team Champions, went to, they'd been to every territory, wrestled the best tag teams all over the world. And, you know, if you were to get PG-13, get a victory over the Rock and Roll Express, that solidifies you right then. You have made it to that next level.
Yes, very much so. It sends you up to the, even in the people's eyes, even in the wrestler's eyes, in everybody's eyes. But to get to that point, you have to earn it, and more or less, well, I guess in our day, you had to draw money. If they put you in the main event and the main event dropped, then they pulled you out of the main event and probably got rid of you. You know what I'm saying? Because in Memphis territory, it was that we wrestled the same towns every night, every week for 30 years. And, you know, Vince McMahon will come to town once every 6 months, maybe twice a year, with all of his big-time flash and his lights and cameras and all that. But he don't even sell the building out there. Lawler and Dundee sell the Mid-South Coliseum out 16 weeks in a row, man. Nobody in history's ever done that. Not Elvis, not the Rat Pack, not nobody. So, I mean, in our world, it was totally different than the wrestling world of today, because if we didn't draw, we didn't eat. If we didn't eat, then they send us on down the road. You see what I'm saying? So it was one of those, you have to make the people believe. And if you believe, they will believe. But if you don't believe it, then the people won't believe it.
Man, I don't remember the exact statistics or have the numbers in front of me, but, you know, at one point, you know, it would be like damn near like half the city would be at the, you know, versus the population status, half the city would be, you know, at the Mid-South Coliseum on Monday nights. They're turning people away.
Oh, yeah, when they did that Lawler-Dundee angle where my dad won Lawler's car, and then he won the house, and then he won the ring, and then he won $5,000, and then they find Lawler drunk in a ditch somewhere. Lance Russell finds Lawler drunk. And they did it, and then they shaved my dad's head, then they shaved my mama's head. You know what I mean? They 16 weeks in a row, that building, the first five matches, nobody watched them because they was in line outside around the edge of the Coliseum buying tickets for the next week before they even seen the match that night. You see what I'm saying? I mean, it was such a big, big deal, man. And see, here's the thing. The people could never call it. If you let the people call the end of the outcome of the match, then you're not going to draw money. You know, if you turn the WWF on, you see Johnny Podolski versus Hulk Hogan. Well, then you say, well, we know Hulk Hogan's fixing to kill Johnny Podolski. You know what I'm saying? So in wrestling, in our world, because we wrestled in the same town every night and for the every, say, you know, Memphis on Monday, Louisville on Tuesday, Evansville on Wednesday, and Nashville on Saturday, and Thursday and Friday would be a little small town somewhere. But every one of those big towns, the same people come to that building every week, and you better do something to make them come back the next week, or they're not coming. So you cannot let the people call the outcome. So if the outcome is supposed to be this and what you think is going to be this, we better not give that to you, because when we do, then you're not going to come back. That's what happened to the rest of it, is because you can call the outcome now every time you look at a show.
Man, you guys could think of things to do on Monday night at TVs on Saturday and all around the territory. Versus it takes Hollywood months to think about, come up with stuff like you guys came up with on the fly. It was like real life magic. It really was.
Yeah, very much so. And see, that's another thing like the world never knew. When we wrestled in what we did on Memphis TV Saturday morning live for an hour and a half, the rest of the TV stations only got an hour of that. So 30 minutes of that was cut out, but that 30 minutes is what we used to draw live for Memphis Monday night. But whatever we did in Memphis on Monday night, we wouldn't do until the next week on the loop, what they call the loop, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, because it takes, you know, we had to end, and then they would air it for people in Louisville, Evansville, and Nashville, and it would only be an hour show. So there was so much things that went on in Memphis that none of the rest of the world ever got to see, because we only did it for Memphis in Memphis. You see what I'm saying? We did an hour and a half show every Saturday morning live, but the people thought it was live in Evansville, Louisville, and Nashville when we sent the tape on the loop, but really it wasn't. So if you lost a loser lead town in Memphis on Monday, you still had to go to Louisville, Evansville, and Nashville that week, and there'd be nothing said about it. Then the next week, you'd be off on Monday because you lost the loser leave town. Then you'd have to go to Louisville on Tuesday and lose it, go to Evansville on Wednesday and lose it, then go to Nashville on Saturday and lose it, and then you would go on about your business to where you were going for the reason you lost the loser leave town anyway. And see, so Memphis, Tennessee got to see so much more of wrestling and things that nobody else got to see because it was only things they did for Lawler and for Monday night. You see what I'm saying? That other 30 minutes was just for Memphis alone, and it was only for the Memphis viewing area, you know, the Mississippi, Arkansas, Missouri, Memphis area right there. That was it. But they got to see way more stuff in wrestling than the rest of the territory ever got to think about seeing.
Absolutely, and that's a great point. Foxy, tell Jamie what type of chair I'm sitting in.
Memphis Coliseum chair.
I got it, Jamie. I'm sitting in a chair from the Mid-South Coliseum.
That is awesome. Kevin Lawler had talked to me about that. He said they were selling them or throwing them away or doing something with them, and you could get them. And I was like, well, shit, I need a Memphis. But here's the thing, my whole entire life, I never sat in one of them chairs. I was always in the dressing room. So, you know, I was like, well, you know what? I don't think I've ever sat in one of them Mid-South Coliseum chairs. Man, the ones that are all up in there. I never been in the stands. So I was like, wow, I need to get me some of those. But, of course, forgot about it or it went away. Is that where you got it? Did they sell them or give them away or throw them away?
Well, let me give a big shout out to my good friends, you know, Will and Lisa. No, like these came through an auction on Summer Avenue, and we scooped some of them up. And they thought enough of me to give me one for Christmas one year. They know what a big, you know, wrestling fan I am. So, yeah, cool. I do the podcast from the Mid-South Coliseum chair. It kind of, you know, kind of gets me in the zone, if you know what I mean.
Right. Is that one of the chairs? Are those the ones that clicked together that were out in the stand, you know, in the stand, like up in the balconies and all that? Is that what you mean to one of those chairs?
No, this would be like a ringside, one of like the folding, like, you know, red chairs.
Oh, yeah. Well, see, that also they gave away the one or sold them or something, the ones up in the rafters, in the bleachers and stuff. You know, they were all connected together. You know what I mean? They were like six in a row. They were all connected. They were made together and all that. You could just raise the little arm thing up and down, and those are out there somewhere too, man. Somewhere,
man. This chair. You know, I'm a big guy, and this chair holds me up, man. I wouldn't want to get hit by one of these mother scuthers. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's them old fake chairs, they call them. I said, well, I ain't never seen a fake chair, and I've never seen a blood capsule, and I've never seen a guy like Big Mabel jumping up in the air and landing on me, and I don't see no other way to fake that. But if that's what makes people smile, I guess, then whatever.
You know, bring it on. Hey, somebody that you've mentioned a couple times so far, man, talk one of the greatest professional wrestlers to ever, you know, lace up a pair of boots. Talk to us about Beautiful Bobby Eaton.
Man, Beautiful Bob was just he was as kind and humble and gracious as he was a great wrestler. The guy was just a number one class act. Bless his heart, he married my retarded sister and fucking, He married my sister, and then it just went to hell from there, I believe. But I'm so thankful to Bobby being in my life. My sister married Bobby when I was about 12 or 13. I just got out of appendicitis surgery, and I was real skinny. So my whole life, he called me Bones. He'd say, Bonesy? Bonesy, what are you doing, Bones? And so my whole life, that's all Bobby Lee ever called me was Bones, man. But Bobby was just, I just love Bobby. I miss Bobby tremendously, man. He's just, everybody that ever knew Bobby misses Bobby tremendously. You know, it's just, he was just such a good, good person, man. If the whole world was full of Bobbies, man, this would be a great place.
Man, if I'm going to think of great tag teams in my lifetime, I'm going to, you know, definitely think of PG-13. But I'm going to think of the Midnight Express, too, man. Him, you know, with Bobby Eaton. That was just Bobby Eaton, one of the best tag team wrestlers ever, 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 ever.
Ever, ever, bar none. Shawn Michaels said it. Ric Flair said it. Bar none, the greatest wrestler to ever step through the ring. But here's another thing. Bobby was one of them wrestlers that could make a shitty guy look good, if you understand what that means.
Yes.
So see, in the wrestling business, you only look as good as I make you look. Rey Mysterio can't fly over that top rope unless I catch him. You know what I mean? So he only looks as good as the guy catching him. The guy catching him really does all the work. You know what I mean? It's the same as Bobby. Bobby was the guy that could take the worst wrestler in the world and make him look like he can just flat out get it. Well, and that is the difference in our art form, meaning whether you're a wrestler or not. It's just anybody can, it's hard to explain, anybody can climb through the ropes. Well, that's not true. A lot of people can't climb through the ropes. They can't even get in the ring because they don't know how to step through, and you know what I'm saying? But, I mean, Evel Knievel once said anybody can jump a motorcycle. He said the trouble starts when you try to land it.
Yes.
And that's the same as wrestling. I mean, that is the Evel Knievel is exactly right. Anybody can hit that jump, but when you try to land it, that's when trouble comes. And the same as wrestling. If you watch two great wrestlers, They make it look so easy that you think you can do it. It's kind of like watching Michael Jordan play basketball. He makes that look so simple and so easy, jumping from the free throw line and flying through the air and putting that ball in that hoop. He makes that look simple. We'll try it. And it's the same as watching two real wrestlers. Two great wrestlers can make that look so flawless and so simple and so easy that anybody can do it until they try. And then they understand, you know, like that Tough Enough show showed. Marines and everybody has cried and quit, and because this ain't ballerina dancing, boy. I heard a man once say.
Why you think I got Foxy? She makes the mayor look good, baby. You know how to bring
her out.
There
you go. That's exactly right. Exactly right. Again, sometimes, hey, listen, it's Foxy and the mayor. It ain't the mayor and Foxy, baby.
Exactly. I'm glad somebody understands that. Thank you, Jamie.
You got to be able to pick up what I'm putting down, baby. You see what I'm saying? You got to just, some people won't ever get that. Some people wouldn't even understand what that means. But those that do, they'll be all right. They got it down.
Hey, JCI, say it again for the people in the back, bro.
I said the show, it is Foxy and the mayor, not the mayor and Foxy, baby.
I told her, I said we're going to Dundee Mountain. She's like, where's yep. that? I said, hell, I don't know, but we're going. I think it's like Handsome Jimmy's in the middle of nowhere.
And it's just like Handsome. That matter of fact, that's kind of how I got my idea, because I went to Boogie Land and got promoted into Boogie Hall of Fame or whatever, and me and my wife, when I got this little 8 acres up here on this hill, man, I started filling up with campers full of wrestling stuff, and it just looks like a little Boogie Land, except mine's not quite as organized as Boogie's. Boogie's is unbelievable. If nobody's ever gone and seen it, they're missing out for real.
I hadn't talked much about this, so I want to. So, actually, you know, the mayor and Foxy, we were, you know, Handsome Jimmy.
No, that's the Foxy and the mayor.
Oh, yeah, exactly. You know, thank you for that correction, sir.
It ain't no problem, man, but I'll let you know when you're wrong.
So will she.
So will I.
That's right. That's why it's Foxy and the mayor.
Exactly.
Not the mayor.
So let me back up here for a minute. Foxy and the mayor, we were part of Handsome Jimmy's 2023, like, you know, you said Hall of Fame class. We got to be a special guest, you know, this year. So we got to, you know, like you said, we got to go to Boogie Land, and we're going through
what
there.
About
and,
that place? Yes, unreal, ain't it, man?
We're going through there, and she said, would you come through here at night? I said, hell no. It's like Texas. I'm going to see Boogie, not the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Like, wrong turn just happened.
Yeah, you know, I never thought of that, but I wouldn't go through there at night either.
No, because like them tree bushes, they actually scrape the hood of your car and the side. We could go film a horror scene out there.
Yes, very much so. But a man once said, I've seen a horror movie start like this, and another man said, well, I've seen porn start like this.
That's very true. Just whatever the wind blows that day, you know, whatever's clever.
That's right, whatever world you're from. But that Handsome place, for those that don't know, man, that is one of the most documented, just unbelievable pieces of wrestling history that you can go through, man. It's unreal, man. For people that don't, you can't explain it. You can't say it because it doesn't. You just have to see it. If you know what I'm saying, it's one of them. You got to go see it, or you're really missing out on something if you're a wrestling fan, you know.
I agree, and what an awesome human being. Like, we drove like 9.5 hours to get there. And had, I'm not going to get into other stuff, but we had quite the adventure, you know, on the trip. But, he made us so welcome and everything. He was, man, he's an awesome dude. He really is.
Yeah, Boogie's never met a stranger, man. In his book, Woo, Mercy Daddy, in that book, man, he's got a couple chapters in there where he moves in with me and my dad, man. And it was pretty fun. You talk about a hell of a play. My mama just, I guess, chose to leave my old man, and so she took off. And when me and Bill come in off the road one night, the house was empty, so we just filled it up with wrestlers and strippers. It was freaking Boogie and Dustin Rhodes and me and my dad and I don't know, a whole bunch of others. John Tatum, just all kind of people. Anybody that came through, we had a hell of a 2-year run right there, me and old Bill. But it damn near killed old Bill. He was already 55 or something then. So by the time I was just loving it, I was like, hell yeah. Yeah, this is what it's supposed to be like, Pop. This is how we're supposed to live. And about 2 years later, back to Bill being the dad, me being the son, and hell. But I mean, yeah, Handsome is such a good person, man. Once again, a kind, humble guy, man. Just and those ones that are mega superstars like that don't think they're superstars, those are the ones that really deserve it, man. You know.
Yeah, he's Matt was so excited, you know, to get the JC Ice video, and he was like, "Well, you know, I'm waiting on the Handsome Jimmy one." I'm like, "It's coming, brother. It's coming. Hold what you got. Right. The mayor's coming through with the plan, baby.
That's it, baby. Boogie woogie, baby. Mercy, daddy.
We gonna rock and roll. We gonna boogie woogie, yeah. Baby."
That's right. When I was a little boy, man, because you got to realize my family came from Australia. So my mother was just a little Australian woman that had never been in the entertainment world or never seen nothing like it. So like, you know, and you got to realize everything's backwards. Like over here, you drive on the left side of the road. I mean, the right side of the road, we drove on the left side of the road. You know what I mean? So my poor mama had to come over here and adjust with me as her child. You imagine a little bitty me, because I wasn't no different then than I am now. I was just little. So it was cute. And then you got away with more. And so, they sent my mama to the airport to pick up Handsome Jimmy one time when she'd only been in America for a friggin' 6-8 months. And of course they told Handsome to put this big platinum wig on and to be handsome and to do the gimmick. And of course he's coming down the terminal, Beverly Mercy baby. And my mama kisses her. My mama's just so embarrassed. This woman, my mama, was just a little bitty. In the end, she was just a mean old little woman because she didn't have been through so much dealing with my dad, my sister, and me. So damn. So I don't blame her. But that was the first rib they ever put on Beverly pick up Handsome Jimmy at the airport, Lord. Then they shaved her head 5 years later. So they did all kind of awful stuff to my mama. Now I think about it.
Hey, Handsome Jimbo's coming to Memphis on a TWA. Go pick him up. And you didn't know he's coming down with a circus, you know.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly right. He said, rolling into Memphis, TWA, lock up all your daughters because Handsome Jim is on the way, baby.
The only dude I know that actually had his own song on FM 100, you know.
That's right. Yeah, that's right, man. You know, FM 100 was filmed out of the Orange Mound Projects out there in Memphis, man.
I didn't know that.
Yes, it was, because me and Wolfie had to go to it, do a show one time when we first started. And I said, where are we going, man? We had to pull off in Orange Mound. I'm like, oh, no. But that was the beginning of the end for me, because that's when I found extracurricular activities, as they would say. But Orange Mound Projects is where that show was made live. I guess they were trying to show that it was okay to go through the projects because they could do a radio show there.
Yeah, I actually work about 4 minutes from the Mid-South Coliseum, so I know exactly what you're talking about, brother.
Yeah, and that place was rough in its day, man. It was wild and rough for sure. It was definitely what the epitome of living in the projects was, you know.
And let me just
put to you, tougher, it makes him believable. When we beat him, we beat somebody instead of just going to the ring, smushing the dude for 5 minutes and pinning him. What good is that?
I can specifically remember Lawler having a line from that match. He said, "McMahon, they're small, but they're wiry."
They're wiry. That's right. And see, me and Wolfie, we came up with a couple of them moves. We invented them ourselves right then before we went up to what we did was we went to the ring in Memphis on Monday or whatever, and then we tried them out on two dudes or whatever. And so them two guys that we worked with, you know, we didn't know Sonny Rogers and Al Brown from anybody, but I mean, they were even like, damn, y'all, it was like, you know, we were working Memphis style. We were working like we work, man. And there, I guess you're supposed to stay facing the hard cam and all that. We ain't worried about all that, man. We're going to do what we do, and y'all worry about the hard cam and the camera shots and all that. That ain't on me. But I do know that every single move we did got a replay thing, whatever they call it. Let's go back and look at it. The double screen or whatever they do. TV and they go live and they show the video back or whatever. It did that every match. I mean, every bump.
What do you think about this concept? And we gotta put Wolfie D over here and give him credit. If you watch that match, his movements, his mannerisms, everything like that, John Cena is a reincarnated, hulked up Wolfie D. From Wolfie D in that match, I believe.
Listen, I have said this a million times. Where he got it was, I was incarcerated. Wolfie was wrestling this Slash. And Wolfie was in OVW with the Prodigy. And the Prodigy was none other than John Cena. So I always say to Wolfie, bro, how much did you tell John Cena about our gimmick? Because I don't care what nobody says. Vince McMahon didn't want to deal with me or Wolfie too, but mostly probably me. So what he did was he went and made his own. Because he loved the gimmick. He loved the way it was. And he made his own. As just like ECW made their own. They made Public Enemy. Because we said we wouldn't go there, so they just made their own, and that's part of the wrestling business. You can, you know what I mean? But I mean, John Cena definitely 100%. The only thing he got different than ours is he put a spinner on instead of a hubcap, and that's it. That's the only thing different.
Absolutely. I totally agree with that.
Yeah, everything else he does, the mannerisms, the walks, the talks, the interviews, whatever, and the, you can't see me, what I mean, so what, anybody can know that's his little thing, but the hubcap and the spinner, and all they did was just upgrade that to the 2000s era and put a spinner on it, and it's because in the wrestling business, if you don't, just like Vince tried to do it with Scott Hall or whatever, and then Kevin Nash. Remember they made the fake Diesel and Razor Ramon with Kane. You know,
horrible.
Because here's the thing that go on. Yeah, but you can't take an established gimmick like that and try to copy it. You know what I mean? You can't. They tried to do that with me and Wolfie in Memphis. They got rid of us and they put New Jack and Homeboy in there, and the people fought it and laughed at them and booed them and held signs and said PG-13 would kick your butt and all that. And so then they got rid of them and brought us back. You know what I mean? You can't take something original and redo it and think it's going to still keep going. It ain't going to happen.
No, and by that time, you know, you're insulting the people with that too. You really are.
Right, exactly what I meant by that. You're insulting the people's intelligence.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Before the WWF had Nation of Domination, wasn't that tested out in Memphis? Wasn't that where it started?
No. It started there. Then we took it to Memphis.
Okay.
Because see, we there was no way we could go on Memphis TV and be these heels in the rapper group of the Nation of Domination, and then try to come back to Memphis and be the hot little hot stepper JC Ice and Wolfie D. You know what I mean? So we just, because like I said, you don't insult the people's intelligence.
Exactly. I remember, the Nation of Domination in Memphis had some pretty cool members too, like Sir Mo, Spellbinder. Man, somebody that's not here anymore. Tracy Talk to Smothers. Us about Tracy Smothers.
Man, Tracy Smothers. Known him since I was 13 years old. He tell everybody. He'd say, "You think Dundee's crazy? Y'all ought to meet his sister." He said, "Oh, you ain't got nothing on her." He would say to me every day, he would send me a text or a message, and it would say, "Dundee, you're alive. Dundee, you're alive. Can't believe you're alive." Because, you know, my life has always been a little wild and a little different. And I'd say, "Yeah, I'm alive, Smud." So the last few months of his life, he lived right up the street from me here. And my brother-in-law, I've got to give my brother-in-law a plug here, J.D. Thunder. He's my brother-in-law. He wrestled, too, a lot around the outlaw groups and some with us. But anyway, J.D. Thunder was Tracy's tag team partner for the last 2 years of his life before he passed away. And he lived next door to me, so... My every time Tracy would come over to pick my brother-in-law JD up or whatever, they'd come over to the house and we'd smiz in the biz in the tree, as Tracy would say, and then we would they'd go on the road. But every day of our life, I believe Trust Mothers every day, he would always say, "Dundee, give me this scenario that happened since I seen you last," and you know, it'd just be little silly things. But anyway, Tracy, every day I would get a text and say, "Dundee, you're alive." And I guess that was his way of saying, "Hey, buddy, I'm thinking about you. Hello." And then one day I texted him not too long ago, right before he died, and I said, "Smothers, you're alive." And he said, "Just barely, Dundee, just barely." I said, "Well, I'm going to come see you." So me and JD got in the car, went over to Evansville to the hospital and saw him, man. And that was the last time I ever saw him. But Tracy had been a part of my life since, like I said, I was 13 years old. He grew up in Hendersonville, in Springfield. We grew up in Hendersonville, and he actually went through my dad's wrestling school also. So I've known him my whole entire life, and another good guy. He went crazy at the end there, man, but Tracy was a really good guy, man. He really was. And he tried to help anybody he could.
I've always heard that, and what, you know, an awesome wrestler. Well, I've made it pretty crystal clear that, you know, PG-13, one of my favorite tag teams of all time. And I'll go ahead and say, you know, I've said many times, I've put on social media and I've said on the show, my all-time favorite wrestler is Brian Christopher.
Yeah, man.
You might see after this interview and talking to me, my personality. Brian Christopher is my favorite wrestler.
Yeah, well, yeah, but yeah, you got a long way to go to be an asshole like him, because he was an asshole to most people. He was my boy, though. I loved him. He was my dog, man, and I always had his back. Matter of fact, after he passed away there, I got a camper, one of these campers in my yard. It's all painted up, and it's full of all kind of wrestling stuff. And I went to work one day, and I came home. Brian was staying with me for a few weeks, and I went to work, and I came home, and he had done took all inside this, my campers, tons and tons of pictures of me and wrestlers and, you know, just articles. And he had done taken all his pictures and covered up all of mine and covered like the whole inside of my camper. It was, you know, I've been gone all day, and I come back home and he's like, "What do you think?" And I'm like, "I think it sucks. I think you need to take it down, idiot, because it's not my, this ain't your camper. This is my camper, so you take it down, idiot." And then he just laughed, you know, did his laugh, and he took a bunch of them down, but he had left a few of them up there. So after he passed away, I went out there and I just sat in my camper, you know, just thinking about Brian, you know, the day I heard that he passed and all that. And I went out there, and I'll be damned if up on the roof he had written, because I had everybody autograph it that's ever stuck inside of it. You know, it's got just regular people, normal people, stars, whatever. And he had written on the wall, "To Jamie, my brother, I love you. Thank you for always taking me in when nobody else would. I love you forever." And oh my God, it hit me so hard, man. I cried and cried like a little baby. And then I got mad, because I'm like, damn you, Brian. That was something that didn't have to be. That's something that shouldn't have been or didn't have to be, man. But, you know, it is what it is. What are we going to do? But he truly was one of the best talkers and one of the best workers in our business, bar none. But he was an asshole for sure. He was a lawler.
Right. And we've discussed on the show and everything. I mean, it's hard, you know, probably, you know, the pressures and having the chip on your shoulder from being Jerry Lawler's son, too. A lot came with that.
Yeah, I kind of know too, because you know my dad was pretty good too.
that's actually what I wanted to ask you about. Yeah, you know, of course, you know Brian Christopher, the son of Jerry Lawler, Jeff Jarrett, the son of Jerry Jarrett. What was it like being the son of, you know, superstar Bill Dundee?
Man, I guess it's like I said. You really don't, when you're the kid. When you're the kid, you don't understand. You really don't. You just think it's what comes with everyday life. You know, like, my dad and Jerry Lawler and then Jerry Jarrett and all them, Handsome Jimmy, all them people that had children, Rocky Johnson. When you're their children, in our world, my mama hung out with wrestlers' wives, my daddy hung out with wrestlers, and I hung out with wrestlers' kids. And that was it. It was a mafia type of world. You know what I mean?
You didn't let nobody in. I've heard you say that before.
Yeah, once you let the outside world in, you kill it. I don't care what it is. Magic, the circus, the mafia, wrestling, anything, entertaining. When you let the outside world in, you kill it. And so being the son of Bill Dundee, it was cool to me, but I really didn't understand until I got older that what mega superstars these people were. You know what I mean? I mean, because there was only four TV channels back then. There was no cable TV and no internet, no cell phones or nothing. So everything they did and accomplished was by word of mouth. If you have to sit around and think of that, man, you know, it was by word of mouth. Somebody had to tell somebody else to turn that TV on that channel for that 1 hour. And like you were saying, in the heyday of wrestling, a share was 100,000 homes, okay? That's how they do TV ratings. They do them by shares. And a share was 100,000 homes. USWA Memphis Wrestling was getting a 16 to an 18 share. That means 1.6 million or 1.8 million homes was tuned into that channel at that time every single week. And that's big time stuff, bro. That's big. Super Bowl only gets like a 24 share today. You know what I mean? So for Bill Dundee and Jerry Lawler and them guys to draw, I never really knew what megastars they were until I got older. And then it dawned on me that, wow, these guys are way bigger than rock stars, man. You know what I mean? They couldn't go nowhere without people mobbing them. I mean, hell, my dad still can't really go nowhere, and I'm sure Lawler too, without people talking to him. But back in them days, people would swing stop cars in the street, get out, run, hug them. I mean, cry, all kind of. It was unreal, man. It was really wild, man.
Man, I could be wrong, or maybe I need to come out of Mississippi more, get out of the house more. Maybe, you know, Foxy needs to get me out and about. But the only three people I can think of ever in my mind that I've ever seen a jumpsuit on is Elvis Presley, Evel Knievel, and superstar Bill Dundee. That's the only three people in my mind that I can see in a jumpsuit.
That's it. Bruce Lee wore them for a little while, because my daddy bought one because it looked like Bruce Lee's one time, I remember. Bruce Lee wore little tight jumpsuit things a couple of times, but no, you're right. Elvis Presley, Bill Dundee, and now the Honky Tonk Man, of course, you know, Jerry Lawler's cousin. But Wayne Ferris always said to my daddy, "Bill, I'm going to take that gimmick and I'm going to make $1 million with it." And Bill said, "Wayne, if you can have it, pal." And by God, he did.
The greatest Intercontinental Man, champion of all time.
That's it. Shake, rattle, and roll, baby. Lawler's cousin.
He's cool. He's cocky. He's bad.
That's him. That's him. And he's got Bill Dundee's gimmick.
Hey, and speaking of megastars, you know, it was a couple weeks back, and and before I say it, I won't be corrected. It's not the mayor and Foxy. Foxy and the mayor were at Sonic.
That's right.
Foxy and the mayor at Sonic. You know, we're getting a little half price drink special there. You know, just chilling out.
That's,
you know, enjoying our Friday
happy
night.
Happy hour. Yeah, at the happy hour, baby.
Exactly. The Foxy and the mayor at happy hour at the Sonic. And I said, "Hey, babe," I said, "guess who I got to do the show?" And she's like, "Who?" I said, "Jamie Dundee." And she's like, "Oh, he's going to do it." I said, "Baby, I told you I'm working with stars these days. Come on now."
That's, the superstar son. That's right, the stars. Yeah, but see, that's pretty funny you say that, because me, I'm just Jamie Dundee. I'm just having to be. I got a tattoo on my arm that says "F you." I'm Bill's boy.
Well, it's my show, so I'm gonna stop you and correct you right there. No, I didn't say Bill Dundee's son. I said Jamie Dundee, Mr. JC Ice himself.
Well, then I appreciate that. But my whole life, I've just been Bill's boy. Them police get my idea. Anybody that say Bill Dundee's boy, so I just tattooed on my arm "F you." I'm Bill's boy, because what the hell? If he paved the road, I'm gonna drive down it.
Which you got to understand.
I appreciate the compliment, man.
You're welcome. We love you, brother. You got to understand the time frame and stuff too. Like, I'm 42 years old, so yeah, your dad's larger in life, but that was a little bit his heyday was a little bit before my time. So
yeah, that's right.
And so my growing up, JC Ice is larger than life to me. That's
well,
my
that's
hero.
Rock and roll. That's cool. That's cool to know, man. But I'm just regular old Jamie Dundee. Now, JC Ice, he is larger than life, and he'll let you know that dude's wild. We try to keep him suppressed. We keep him put away around here because my wife and kids, they don't dig that dude.
I'm sure they
he's
don't.
He's definitely a different person. Yeah, he's definitely a different person than Jamie Dundee. 100%. He's definitely another persona of mine. But we try to keep him put away. But because a lot of people say to my wife, say, "What is it like living with Jamie Dundee?" She's like, "Well, hell, most time we don't even know he's in the house, you know, because I mean, I'm just a regular old quiet guy. But when I get on shows like this or anything, JC Ice persona starts to come out, and that's why I don't like doing much wrestling stuff at all, for real, because it brings back good memories, bad memories, and it also brings out the other side of me that we try to keep put away, you know.
Speaking of doing wrestling stuff, man, I'm in Horn Lake, Mississippi, so I'm just about an hour and a half from Blytheville, Arkansas. I saw where, my good buddy Teddy owns the AWA over there. You've done some stuff over there for the AWA.
Yeah, Doug Gilbert and Tommy Rich called me and wanted to know if I would come and do some stuff up there, and I said I will. I have children around that area, so maybe I can stop in and see them. And but see, my wife, she don't know, but Doug and Tommy, they got a cookie making business. They was in their rooms. They had an easy bake oven, and they were making cookies and brownies. And we were gonna start a new business. It's gonna be called Body Slams Brownies. It's gonna be Tommy Ridge, Doug Gilbert, and myself making cookies and wrapping them and putting sprinkles on them and sending them out. So y'all be prepared and get ready to watch out for Body Slams cookies, because they're coming. We fixing to start a new business. That's what we were discussing.
Hey, y'all and heard it here first, ladies and gentlemen.
That's right. First on Foxy and the Mayor show.
Damn you, Jamie. Damn you. I'll never hear the
not
end of this.
Damn me. Damn you. You picked her. She's better than you. So when they're better than you, it's your fault, not mine. It's in my house. It's Angela and Jamie. So there you go.
I fully concur with that. You know, I'll take a backseat to Foxy any day.
And you have to, whether you want to or not.
Hey, man, speaking of the AWA, yours truly the mayor. I'm the new announcer for the AWA. I dig that, Jamie.
Well, man, by taking you what, then that means that your show's doing good. But now that you change it to Foxy and the Mayor, the sky's the limit now, baby. Shoot.
I just, you know, my phone's going to be blowing up later today. It's going to be New Horizons on the way, baby.
That's it, man. WWE's calling, but the bad part is they're calling for Foxy and not the mayor. But don't worry about it. Just ride the ride, bro.
Hey, you know, people like reality and everything like that, so we'll just keep it reality-based. Like
That's right. Just keep it real, man. It is what it is, hell.
I just found out this morning, you know, my co-host, you know, for, you know, couldn't make it all. And I tell her, I was like, "Hey, you're going to make your podcast debut this morning." She's like, she's kind of sit there. I'm like, "Come on." I said, "The time's now. We got Jamie, JC Ice Dundee." I said, we're going to knock it out of the park. I said, "Are you nervous?" Right. And she's like, "Yeah."
Yeah, she spoke so much this show, though. I mean, it's her turn. Well, you ain't got no questions, because look here, of course, like anything, I'm not prepared, so my phone is on 3%, so we got 3% left, but the good thing is, when it cuts off, that's how everybody else ends their show. Well, Dundee's gone again, and then do what you got to do, but you got any questions, Foxy? Because, you know, I ain't heard you speak yet, and it's Foxy and the mayor now.
I'm just curious about the Jerry Springer show.
The Jerry Springer show.
Now we're talking the good times. It started out with the Iron Sheik and a guy named Anthony Durrani, who was one of the Pit Bulls in ECW. They did a show, and when they went in the back, when they got done with the show, the producer said, "We need midgets." And the Iron Sheik said, "Jamie Dundee owns a midget." So he gave him my phone number. Yeah, yeah, I owned my midget. Danny was my boy. I owned him. The little midget D that came out there, yeah, he was mine. I owned him. I keep him in a little cage like a pit bull stuff. But rest his soul, he died in the year 2000 because midgets don't live long because they're so small. But anyway, the Jerry Springer Show called me the first time about getting my midget. And I said, let me tell you something. My midget ain't like the other midgets in the world. My midget's plumb crazy. And if you think I'm going to put my midget on an airplane without me, you lost your mind. My midget will be up in the cockpit smoking cigarettes, trying to fly it and all kinds of stuff. So now you're going to fly me in and me and my midget will come. So then they said, well, we need 100 midgets. I said, 100 midgets? I don't even know if there's 100 midgets on the planet. And so I was like, okay, let me see it. So I found 30 midgets, and me and 30 midgets flew up and did a show called Invasion of the Little People. That was the first show I ever did with them. And then from then on and off, they would call me here and there randomly for people because they knew I could find, you know, they would say, Jamie, we need a one-legged black transvestite midget to join the clan. And I would find that guy. And so they were like, we need you every week. So every week they would call me on Sunday night and tell me what they needed. And Monday morning, me and whatever they needed would be flying up to Chicago to do the Jerry Springer Show. And then it became such a big routine for me that I quit wrestling and everything. I loved it. I did it for about 2 years. I just loved it. They paid me big money, and everybody had fun, and got to fly to Chicago and do whatever we wanted, and then fly back home. And then 24 hours, we'd be home with double or triple the money I would have made wrestling all week. So I was thrilled with it. I loved it.
I turned it on one day. I'm like, oh, shit, he's even got his dad involved. Bill Dundee's on Jerry Springer.
Got my whole entire family involved. My mom's on one. I did a Steve Wilkos's pilot episode for him to get his show. I did the pilot episode called Steve to the Rescue for him to show all the TV studios so he could get his show. My mom was on that one. We rent my mama's house and everything. I put my whole damn family on there. We all got paid.
You're such an inspiration. I'm like, if Jamie can bring Bill Dundee on a Jerry Springer, by God, I'm bringing Foxy on Wrestling Talk this morning.
Hell yeah, that's right. And shoot, and then I even brought my mother, the woman that had despised the wrestling business, and Jerry Springer was down there just like the wrestling business. My mama she went on there because money talks, and man, they pay big money to do them on-site shows, man, you know. They paid big. Here's the thing. If you call the Jerry Springer Show with a story, you get to stay at the Days Inn and you get $50. But if they call me to bring you, then we're going to stay at the High Regency and we get all the money we can stand. So, I mean, it was fun. It was great. I loved it. And I didn't know it would affect me as much. I was upset when Jerry Springer died. It kind of hurt because I saw, you know, I knew him pretty well for 2 years straight every Monday going up there doing shows. I really got to know him all, you know.
Yeah, I totally understand. And hey, Jamie, all kidding aside, man, thank you from the bottom of my heart for doing this show, making Foxy feel comfortable in the video you did for Matt. I mean, I'm a fan for life, Mark for life. I got nothing but love, you know, seriously, for Jamie Dundee. And thank you from the bottom of my heart, brother.
Well, man, I appreciate that, bro. And here's the thing, like I say, man, I always wondered in my life all the things you sacrifice being an entertainer, whether it's a singer, a dancer, a wrestler, whatever it be in the entertainment world, a rock star. You have to sacrifice a lot of things, man. You got to sacrifice friends and family and all kind of things. You have to sacrifice to chase your dream, because if not, you're never going to catch that dream. And so, I mean, you know, it is what it is. Some things you were sacrificing for, I guess. But I used to always wonder, I wonder if anybody even really cared about all the broken bones and the injuries and all the time and not at home and all the good and the bad. And I wondered, I mean, you know, it just reminds me when I hear you say that, it reminds me that, yeah, you know what, it was worth every damn bit of it, man. And I appreciate it. And I'm sure all the other old far wrestlers like myself appreciate it too. So anybody out there listening, if you got somebody you know needs a little pep in their step, a little encouragement, just tell them what you really think, man. And maybe it'll help somebody that you don't even know, you know. But I appreciate it. Thank you very much, bro. And no problem. I'm glad I could help, man, for real.
And thanks a lot from the bottom of my heart, too, for also screwing up my show and changing the name. Now it's Wrestling Talk with Foxy. No longer it's Mayor McCall.
Yeah, but you know? I didn't screw it up. You screwed it up because you married her. So don't get mad at me. Listen, when you upgrade in life, then sometimes you have to lose things such as your name on the show. And before too long, it'll just be the Foxy Show with him. That's what it'll be called. The Foxy Show with him. With him. And him can be anybody because you're pouting because everybody's calling it the Foxy Show and you put all the work in, but nobody cares. It's Foxy and him.
Hey, let's play this out different. We're going to be at Sonic in 2 weeks, you know, again for happy hour. And she's going to be like, John, I started my own wrestling podcast. I'm like, really? She's like, it's a Foxy Show. I'm like, who's your first guest? She's like, Jamie Dundee. I'm like, I'll be damned.
Of course. But here's a lot of times in life when Jamie Dundee's your first guest, maybe your last show, because it just depends on what kind of mood I'm in. If I keep it right or if I keep it USWA or ECW, as we said.
Like but Eminem anyway, said, the FCC won't let me be.
That, yeah, right on, bro. As downtown Bruno says, mama said it bees that way sometimes.
Hey, another awesome guy. Bruno did a video for Matt, too. Bruno, hell of a dude. I'm proud to call Bruno a buddy.
Me too, man. Me and him been missing each other. We've been calling back and forward trying to tell, because, you know, Bruno was my very first match, August 28th of 1988. It was me against Bruno, and it was my very first match ever in the Mid-South Coliseum, and I got it on video, the whole match, and I made a copy of it. I got to send it to Bruno, but he's been calling me, and I've been calling him. We were trying to play catch-up just to, you know, I ain't talked to each other in 10 or 15 years but until we did that show in Blytheville. He was at that show in Blytheville, you know?
Yeah, Bruno lives like 10 minutes from me.
Oh, yeah, he lives in Walls, Mississippi.
Hey, the first ever podcast, he actually came to my house and did it. How cool was that? Bruno was my only in-studio guest. See,
but I'll tell you something cooler than that is The Rock bought him a truck. How cool is that, man? The Rock bought you a truck, bro. That's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. The Rock brought the truck, sent the truck to Walls, Mississippi. We're famous now, baby.
Hell, yeah, and then he should have had The Rock sign the thing. I would have.
Exactly. Well, man, seriously, thank you so much for coming on and doing this, brother.